The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. It's time to go on the mat. The Cedar Valley's longest-running radio show devoted entirely to wrestling. Brought to you by Rolling Ford and the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum on 1650 The Fan.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum. This is our second episode or edition of 2018, joined by a man who loves crunchy, crisp apples, Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. Welcome, Andy.
Good to be here, Kyle.
Great to have you in studio again, second time in a row here in 2018. And if you are given to nostalgia, which I don't think you are, this would be the weekend of the National Duels in Cedar Falls if this would have been a few years ago. Yeah. And I miss it. I miss it a lot. I wish we still had that event in some capacity, but things change, and here we are. We talked last time at length about just the changing dynamics of the end-of-the-year tournaments and how competition has gotten kind of watered down a little bit. And I think not having the National Duels, you miss out on all these great opportunities to see these great teams go against each other. In Division One, they had the multi-division nationals recently. We can get into that. But your thoughts initially on the National Duels and missing that great event where you had all of the divisions up at the Unidome, I thought it was comparable to the Nationals as far as my love of going to a wrestling event.
Yeah, it was pretty cool back when it was at the Unidome for sure. I mean, when it went on the road other places, I don't think it was quite the same. But when you got all the divisions under one roof, and you could sit there in the stands and watch everything from D1 to, you know, D2, D3, NAI, JUCO, women's. I thought that was really cool, especially for the teams at the lower divisions that don't get to compete in front of 15,000.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, when you think about, like, some of the battles that transpired there, I mean, you know, I remember Ben Askren bumping up a weight to take on Roger Kish. I remember Metcalf against Jordan Burroughs and McDonough. Andrew Long had a really good scrap there. And, you know, you just go on and on. But the last few years of it, to me, were the best. And, you know, you never knew when, like, somebody random like Barry Zito would just show up and, out of nowhere. But,
It
was a fun event. It just never, you know, as much as they tried to fiddle with it and move it to the end of the season, and, you know, it just never was the same as when it was under the roof at the Unidome.
Yeah, never caught on. They made it the multi-division with every division, and then even before that, it was the Virginia Duels, and then it was in Nebraska for a while. Iowa City hosted it, and they tried to do kind of like a bowl type of series, and it really did. It never resonated. I don't think fans understood it. I didn't understand it and how it was going to be executed and who wrestled who, and big blow-ups on teams thinking they needed to wrestle another team, and now we're losing that competition at the Division I level. I don't know if we're going to see it back in any capacity anytime soon. I don't see that there's a direction for that at this point.
Not under that old format. I mean, certainly not. I don't think it will ever be back in a mid-season type of event. I think you're looking at, if there's ever going to be a dual championship, it's probably what they're talking about now, which is a one-semester sport, second semester NCAA championships where they are on the calendar now, and then a dual championship in late April. But we'll see. There's a long way to go before it gets to that point, I think.
And talking about duels in particular, I'm a big fan of dual meets, and I think it's the way to go to build an audience and build a base. I think where you and I both agree is that the scoring is really antiquated and it's out of touch.
Yeah.
With what needs to happen. I think that you could have an automatic incentive to score if you knew that it was going to be cumulative and it was part of your team total. And it's exciting for the fans to see that go up just on the team score like that. I think that 3 points for a decision, for a major decision, it's just so boring. And just, you go to a dual meet and it's pretty predictable on what's going to happen. There's nothing exciting about that. And if there's anything, I agree with Cale Sanderson a lot of things, but he's not really for this dual meet format from what I've heard from a couple years ago. His best point he makes is that the national tournament is equitable in that you can have the first, second, third place guy. Everyone has an opportunity to score points. And whereas a dual meet, you can have the number one and two guys. You have Kyle Dake against David Taylor. One of those guys isn't scoring points. And I think that's a good point as far as promoting the national tournament. Don't know if you've thought in depth about that, but as far as how we proceed with dual meets, I'm thinking of it in terms of how do we get to the point where it's a really exciting, entertaining product, not just the boring 3-4-5-6 type of scenario that we have now.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there, and I've been saying that for like 5 years now, ever since the 2013 National Duels up in Minneapolis, where there were only like 2,700 people in the stands for other reasons. I mean, it was the same weekend as the Minnesota State qualifying tournament, but spent a lot of time on that drive home thinking about dual meets, and in my opinion, like a match that goes 11 minutes and I win by 1 second of riding time, my team wins by 1 second of riding time, I shouldn't be rewarded the same way that your team wins when your guy wins by seven with like 5 minutes of riding time, you know. But that's the way it is, and you know, you see so many matches where a guy is up 4-1 in the final minute, and there's no incentive for him really to take a lot of risk. And you know, I mean, even if he goes, gets another takedown, it's, you know, makes it 6-1. It's not changing the team score any. I would just, I'm with you. I'd like to see cumulative scoring. I don't know how you would weigh the fall in that case, but it'd be kind of cool to see dual scores up in, you know, the high 80s, 90s, 100s for each team.
Yeah, it makes it so fun just to think about the possibilities of what that could look like. And even if you're behind and you get a fall, how much that would change the team score. I think just off the top of our heads, probably talking about, we're on the same page, a fall would probably be worth 20 points. And then if, like, a maximum you can get now for a tech fall might be 19 with riding time. So a fall would always be worth more than a technical fall. So I think it's just something that, I don't know if the NCAA is on board with it, if they've ever thought about it, but if we're looking to advance the sport, even if we, as the media, just try to say, here's what the team score would look like, and do something where we can just show what this product would look like, I think it could be a lot of fun for the sport, especially when we have a lot of these good dual meets coming up that we get to talk about. With Tom Brands, he's our first guest today coming up. He's the head wrestling coach at the University of Iowa. And then someone that we haven't heard from in a while, Hudson Taylor. He was a three-time All-American for Maryland. He's going to fill us in on some of his projects, but as we talk about what's upcoming here, some huge dual meets, especially for the University of Iowa. Oklahoma State this weekend, followed by Ohio State, Minnesota, Penn State on the horizon. But as we look coming up here, probably the number one question against Oklahoma State is, will P.D. Hawk wrestle Pat Downey Jr.? Will he be in the lineup at 184? Got his graduate classes. I think he graduated from college going into graduate school. I think there's some sort of a loophole. The school doesn't start at Iowa yet. Will he be able to be eligible for the lineup? So I think that's a storyline that's going to be fun to see how they do against Oklahoma State.
Yeah, and first of all, with the Downey situation, Iowa released its probable lineup earlier today, and Pat Downey was not on the list of probables. He's still not on the roster yet, but we shall see.
Even without him, though, I think
it's going to be a great duel.
Yeah, it's going to be great, but I think Iowa, and I wouldn't have said this before the season started, I think Iowa's going to win this, especially with Spencer Lee being in the lineup. I think Piccinini hasn't wrestled well as of late, hasn't looked really solid right now, got beat 9-5 against NC State. I think that he's a guy that's really on fire right now, especially in that hometown crowd. They want blood right now, and I think that there's even a possibility for bonus points at 125, and then you go through the lineup. I think that Iowa has a real good chance of making this out of reach, especially if Pat Downey was in the lineup. I think that could be even more of a possibility, but as it stands right now, I think that Iowa's going to win this dual meet.
I think it's one of those I love the dual meets where like six or seven matches, like one team could win, like both teams could win seven matches maybe. And, you know, you look at things from the Oklahoma State side. One of the things that's going to be really interesting for me to see is just, what do we get out of the Cowboys on Sunday from the standpoint, they're coming back from overseas, a long trip over there, a long trip back. I don't know when they got back to Stillwater, but I'm not, you know, 22 years old anymore, but I know how I felt coming home from overseas three times this year and how long it's taken me to kind of get adjusted. And then you think about not just the plane ride home, plane flight home. They're getting on a bus and driving up Saturday from Stillwater. So
Yeah. How
will that affect the Cowboys?
And it could. I mean, I don't know how it affected them against Wyoming, but they didn't look great in that meet either. NC State's a quality program, so pulling out that win in Naples, Italy is big. But I just haven't seen that fire, that consistency out of Oklahoma State yet. And maybe this is the time they pull it out, because Oklahoma State does a lot of times have Iowa's number. They have a style that is good against the University of Iowa and how they wrestle. So by no means is it a sure thing that Iowa's locked, just because they have a few good pieces in place. But the Downey situation, if he was in the lineup, certainly makes it a lot more interesting. But if you go up and down the lineup, you say there's a lot of just toss-up matches where you just kind of say, hey, who's going to win this one, especially in the upper weights. I think Spencer Lee's a lock to win it 25, just the way he's going right now. And that's hard to say against a guy like Piccinini, who's a returning All-American. But I just think that he's going to do something special this weekend, and Iowa fans are going to love it.
One of the things that's really interesting for me is, you know, with our track wrestling rankings this year, watching the team standings change week to week. And about 4 weeks ago, Oklahoma State was a pretty firm number three, and there was a gap between Oklahoma State at three, and I can't remember who at the time was four, maybe Missouri, and then 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Iowa was sitting at 8. That group of 4 through 8 was really jammed up, and now it's completely flip-flopped. Iowa is at 3. Oklahoma State is at 8. So it's just kind of been reflective of how the two teams wrestled from mid-December through the holiday break and into this first week of January as well. So it's going to be a fun one to watch, not just on Sunday, but how those teams get sorted out over the course of the next couple months as well.
Iowa State gets in the win column over Oregon State. Oregon State led by Jim Zaleski, who is from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, former three-time NCAA champion for the University of Iowa, comes in against Kevin Dresser's Cyclones. I went to the dual meet. There was good energy there. I feel like they have a good product. I think there's some buzz around the program, even though they're not winning right now. Just a couple things that stood out to me was that Iowa State was going to win no matter what. Danny Bush got a fall at 174. It started at 197, which really solidified the meet. I think what was important was that Dane Pastano was down, and instead of ending on a loss, they got a win, and that really solidified a lot of things. But I think Kanan Storr picking up a takedown in the first period, at the end of the first period, really kind of shifted some momentum as far as what they're going to do mentally to continue with the season. They just need some little breaks right now to get to that situation where they're getting a little bit more consistency. Because I've been surprised that they've lost a couple of these, like Northern Colorado. That really surprised me that they lost that dual meet. And maybe they aren't where they should have been at this point, but it really is a slow process, and it's a working process for the Cyclones at this point of the season.
Yeah, absolutely, and I thought maybe we'd see a little bit more progress to this point out of some of those young guys. I thought they'd be a little bit higher up in the rankings. Ian Parker at 133, Kanan Storr at 141. Battled a little bit of inconsistency this year, but I think back to Tom Brands's first year at Iowa in 07, and they really set the stage for their run from 08, 9, 10 by what happened at the end of the 2007 season, getting a Big Ten champ and Mark Perry in it, and he follows it up with an NCAA title. Some guys really wrestled well at the end of the season. They carried that over, had a good spring at a lot of different levels with guys making world teams, Mike Zadik going and winning a world silver medal that year. And just the program momentum that got going at the end of the year, I think, was really vital for that three-year run of titles that the Hawkeyes got on. And I think if you're a Cyclone fan, that's what you want to see the rest of this season, is just, you know, some clear, tangible proof that, that things are moving in the right direction and that the program's picking up speed.
What do you think? Can Iowa State get an All-American? Storr's in a tough weight class. It's hard to even say they're going to get one at this point. I don't know who it would be other than him. right now. So
yeah,
maybe that's, one. It's going to be a stretch. It's
yeah,
really tough to get one.
Yeah, I mean, because you look at the top six at 141, and they're rock solid. You know, from Bryce Meredith, who I think has got a couple, he's pinned Storr a couple times this year already. He's number one. Then, you know, Kevin Jack, Dean Heil, Yanni Diakamahalis has looked great as a true freshman this year. Joey McKenna. I'm going to forget somebody here. But anyway, one through six in the rankings, Jaden Ironman as well. One through six, you know, you're talking about some studs there. And then you throw in, you know, I think from seven on down to about 14 or 15. Those guys are pretty doggone good, too. And Storr, I think we got him sitting right around 16 as well. So 141 is going to be a lot of fun at the national tournament. There are going to be some incredible matches, basically from the quarters on. And yep. And it's going to be tough for people to, you know, crack that All-American stand if you're not one of those top six guys already.
Well, Dean Heil is a two-time NCAA champion, returning two-time, has lost one match over the last two seasons. He's already lost two matches this season.
Two in a row.
Yeah, two in a row. Bryce Meredith and Kevin Jack. So it's it really is wide open. Is the Dean Heil era over? Do you just not feel it right now? I don't feel like he's going to be the guy this year. I think a lot of people think Yanni Diakamahalis will be the guy. But it's hard to say. He does pull through in the clutch.
Yeah, I think you're going to see those matches are going to be determined by a lot of little things. I mean, just like Yanni and Ironman down at the South Beach Duels. I mean, Yanni was in control for 6 minutes and probably about 45 seconds and then took a shot that he didn't need to take from distance and got cradled up and put on his back. He was up three. So I think you're going to see a lot of, like, little things that are going to make a big difference in matches like that. Can Heil find a way to do what he's done in the past? I don't know. He's kind of put himself in a spot in the seedings probably now where, you know, he could come back and win the Big 12 championships and maybe be a two seed or there where you're not facing somebody like McKenna in the quarterfinals. But whoever's sitting in those 3, 4, 5, and 6 spots, they're going to have to win 3 really big matches to win a national title. As opposed to, you know, it's not a whole lot easier if you're the 1 or 2, but it certainly is when you're not facing one of those other top 5 guys.
Got to close out this segment. Just a couple parting shots here. 125 at the Big Tens is absolutely going to be a gauntlet. That's enough reason to go out to East Lansing, Michigan. Wartburg fell to Augsburg at the multi-divisional national duels, but they get a chance for redemption on Thursday, February 1. So want to plug that dual meet coming up here in a few weeks. Northern Iowa is at the Virginia duel, so we'll be tracking that as well. Our guest upcoming is part of a big dual meet this weekend against Oklahoma State. Tom Brands, head wrestling coach at the University of Iowa, is next on the mat.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. When all you want is sports, all you need is 1650 The Fan.
We are back on the mat, 1650 The Fan. I'm Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, along with Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. Andy, our next guest is the only person to ever accomplish all of the following: win an individual NCAA championship, be on an NCAA championship team, win an individual world championship, be on a world championship team, win an Olympic gold medal, and coach an NCAA championship team. That man is Tom Brands. He's the head wrestling coach at the University of Iowa. How are you, Tom?
I am wonderful. How are you?
Doing good. And when we list off those credentials, what did you do mentally? How did you prepare mentally to achieve the outcomes you wanted?
You know, I tell you what, you laid something out there that I'm not even aware of, you know, so that's, you know, whatever. It's, you go forward every day and you don't let things rattle you. And, you know, you're going to surround yourself with the best people you can. And when that happens, you can accomplish a lot. And when you can trust the people that are working with you and know that they're doing everything they can, then there's a lot of things that can be accomplished. And what I mean by that is, you know, if I have that security that, you know, as hard as I'm working or as committed as I am, And I know that we got eight people on our payroll that are the exact same mentality, mindset, looking forward to it. You know, good things are happening. And as a, even as a competitor, you know, wrestling for Gable, you know, as committed as I was to me, I knew he was as committed to me as anybody ever has been. And so when you got that kind of backup all the way around you and support group with family, you know, my mom is a firecracker, and, you know, my dad taught me a lot about competition. You know, those types of things, they just, it makes you bulletproof. You feed off it.
A lot of buzz right now about Spencer Lee maybe being the greatest recruit to come into the University of Iowa, but from my vantage point, another guy that had a lot of buzz was Steve Marco on the opposite end of the spectrum. He came in, was on the poster at the University of Iowa, came and wrestled as a true freshman. What was the similarity between those two and the buzz surrounding Spencer Lee and Steve Marco?
The level they compete at and the level that they could win at. And what I mean by that is, you know, you saw Marco in senior-level training camps as a high schooler, and he was holding his own, if not more, and Spencer Lee the same way. When Spencer Lee was in Rio with Dan Dennis, I mean, he was holding his own against the best guys in the world. And, you know, that's when your eyes start to open to, you know, how good this guy is and, you know, what he's all about. Marco was the same way. The difference between Marco and Lee is that Lee is good in every position, you know, top, bottom, neutral. And I'm talking freestyle as well. You know, Marco needed a little bit more develop maybe in his bottom wrestling, a little bit more develop in his parterre defense. But both those guys were super tough, had those mentalities that, you know, where they could be in a scrap and they could get the next takedown against the best guy in the world, and then they would actually do it. They could do it.
Do most people that you come across want to talk about Spencer Lee? Is he the talking point everyone wants to have with you?
Yeah, and it's probably natural for that. And, you know, the other thing is he's a 25-pounder. And, you know, 25-pounders are the first weight out for the most part. And, you know, and so now it's kind of, you got a guy, here's a guy that there's a lot of buzz around him, and he's probably created more buzz about our program, especially being in the lineup now. And plus, he's a 25-pound. He's a natural catalyst. So there's a lot of reasons for that. But, you know, I don't mind. But I'll tell you what, we got some other guys, too, and you know. You know, and I don't think as a coach you have to be careful to dole the compliments around and make sure that everybody feels wanted and loved. But, you know, Spencer Lee has a unique mentality about his wrestling, just like Alex Marinelli does, just like Brandon Sorensen does, just like Michael Kemmerer does, just like Sam Stoll does. And Wilkie's getting into that category, and we're making progress, and, you know, and we got to move everybody into that category. But, you know, Spencer Lee is not unique for this team where we have just one guy that is putting it together. We have, you know, and now Marinelli's in the lineup and he's healthy, and, you know, we love that guy. We love how he competes and represents himself, and he's got a little bit of Gilman in him and how he talks. You know, he'll say something. The only difference between him and Gilman is Marinelli will say something and smile, and Gilman would say something, and, you know, you wouldn't see anything but a stone look on his face. So, but they're very similar in not really worrying about how they're being portrayed.
Tom, what made it the right move to plug Spencer in right now?
That he can do it, number one, that he's capable, that he wanted to do it, number two. And when I say number two, that's really number three, because we wanted him to do it. So that he's capable of doing it's number one, and that we wanted him to do it, and then that he wanted to do it, and it's okay with his family. And when you get those three or four things put together, it's a no-brainer.
We're on the mat with Tom Brands, head wrestling coach at the University of Iowa. You have Oklahoma State this Sunday, and you are linked eternally with John Smith, the head wrestling coach there. Why do you think that people have made that connection between you and John?
He kicked my butt, beat me 14-4 in 1991. That's how I'm connected to him in my own mind. So, you know, for me, but here's the thing with John Smith, and he is a super competitive guy, and I'm not sure how friendly we could ever be just because we're after the same, you know, real estate or whatever you want to say. But there's nobody that I respect more as a peer. And you know that when I say that, that's coming from the heart, because it's hard to come by peers that you respect. You know, the way that people operate out there. And there's just, there's a lot of ways to accomplish things. And I think that if there was anybody out there that I could work for, and I'm talking about being an assistant coach for, you know, there's probably maybe two people out there, and one of them's got my last name. His name's Terry Brands. And then the other one, you know, he has a high standard, and he's very serious about what he's trying to accomplish.
Do your wrestlers understand the magnitude of Iowa, Oklahoma State, and the history behind it?
We try to put it in front of them, but, you know, I would say that the answer to that is yes. The difference between when I wrestled maybe and when what's going on now is, you know, neither program's won a national title since 2010, and you know, that's a long time. And if we're 1-2 and they won last year and we were second and we won the year before and they were second and, you know, it was like that, you know, there would definitely be a natural uptick in the intensity from you know, maybe an awareness, a fan point of view. You know, I'm not saying from our point of view or their point of view, there's definitely that intensity. It's built in every time you step on the mat. But that would be the difference. But as far as histories and knowing what's at stake, they know. They know for sure.
You have another Brands that's going to come into the program, Nelson Brands. Your nephew is going to be an Iowa Hawkeye next year. What did that recruiting process look like with a family member?
You know, it was one of those things where there was a lot of people out there, and they were kind of, I don't know if they were playing games or not, but they were recruiting, and it was kind of a cute, funny thing. And they were Division I programs that have pretty good programs and pretty good staffs. And, you know, it was enough. Because he's planning on going on an unofficial visit to a couple places. And so I went and saw him, and I treated it like any other recruit. Drove out there, met with the parents, met with the kid and listened to him, heard him out, got to know him a little bit better, and laid it on the line for what we were about, and just telling him that he's what we're looking for. And it was that simple. And, you know, he's got to get a lot better. You know, I know his DNA probably better than other recruits, obviously, and I know that we can be hard on him because he's hard on himself, and he knows that he has to get better. But the assets that he has are gonna, you know, always give a guy like that a chance. He's upbeat. He's charismatic. People like him. He's optimistic, and at the same time, he knows he has work to do, and he's humbled that way.
You talked a lot about recruiting in your opening season press conference. What changes have you made in recruiting?
Well, Ryan Morningstar definitely needed to take it serious. And even though it's in that job description for that position as an assistant coach, whoever's in that position, he owned it. And there was no Tom Brands looking over his shoulder. He was calling the shots. He was going places. And it wasn't just a fad where when he came in, okay, I'm going to get with it, and then he's doing a good job for a year, and then, okay, and then we got, okay, I got to get together. Now I got to crack the whip on him. He has owned this thing from day one. We have talked about it on a daily basis. We still do. And, you know, we had to make some changes on how we recruited the best guys in the country. And not just that we go after them, but how we talk to them. The relationships that we have with their coaches, with their families, the offers that we give coming out of the gate and not a wait-and-see approach. You know, and because we're up against some guys that are doing some things that, you know, we don't do those things at Iowa. We don't do those things at Iowa. And, you know, now that can be maybe a firestorm and some bulletin board material for other places, but we had to change some things. And Ryan Morningstar has owned it. And he's been at a high level, and every day his level increases. And that's what you need. That's what I mean when I talk about a partner. And we really haven't had many partners. I'm talking about we've had good coaches here, but we haven't had partners to where they own their position. And I'll tell you what, it's not an 8-to-5 job. And I'm preaching to the choir here if coaches are listening, and even high school coaches, because you're sacrificing your family and lots of things. But, you know, I'm talking to business owners as well. They know what I'm talking about. And, you know, when you have a coach that's a real live partner every step of the way, that's what you need. And that's what we changed. I'll tell you what, it's a partnership. That's how I would say it. I keep trying to think of a way to describe it, but that's what it is. It's a true partnership where he owns it. I mean, this is his baby. This isn't Tom Brands as the boss, and I'm working for Tom Brands. This is, I'm Ryan Morningstar. This is my job, and I'm at a high level doing it every day.
When you said you have to be absolutely sure about recruits now, how do you be absolutely sure?
You doggone make sure that they're the right makeup. I mean, we've in the past that I've had assistant coaches go out on the road and this is our guy. And the first day in the room, you know, I know this isn't our guy. And you know what? Shame on me. Shame on Tom Brands. But I'm going to tell you something. Tom Brands' role is this domain right here. You know, I'm sitting here in the wrestling room right now. I'm looking at this mat right now. This is my domain. That's my job description. My job description is to be on campus and being with my administration and making sure we get the things done. Like, we got a huge project in the works right now that we're trying to get in the 11th hour done. And that's my job. And so, you know, to be able to trust Ryan to do what he's doing, it's a no-brainer. To me, it's like, this shouldn't even be an issue. But you know what? It's an issue. But it's not an issue with me because of his level of commitment to it.
Is early recruiting good for wrestling?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, the rules are what the rules are, and they're not going to go away, and they're only going to be more probably relaxed as far as official visits and at-home visits or coaches going to the home. The one thing that's changed that makes it harder is you can't have unofficial visits on campus, starting their freshman year. Now those unofficial visits are their junior year, which is absolutely mind-boggling to me. That's the biggest change for me. But it doesn't matter. We go by the rules, and we're staunch rule followers, I guess you could say.
Tom, speaking of rules, what do you think of the scramble rules a couple months into the season at this point from what you've seen?
I think the NDS, the neutral danger signal, the neutral danger zone, I think that's probably been a good thing if referees are on the ball, which I think they have been for the most part. I think it speeds up the scramble there. It definitely speeds up the scramble.
All right, Tom, we have to end our former portion of the interview, but we have a segment we call the Hot Box. We give you 5 questions, hoping to make you sweat. Tom Brands, are you ready to be locked into the Hot Box?
I love the Hot Box.
All right, question number 1. What state was George Armstrong Custer born?
Michigan.
Nope. Close. Ohio.
Well, he lived in Michigan.
Okay, but now that he's from Ohio State and you're a fan of George Armstrong Custer, does that mean you're a fan of Ohio State?
No, of course not.
Okay. Question number...
I'll tell you what, I'm a fan of Tom Ryan. He was a former teammate. There's some good memories there.
All right. Question number 2. Sheldon High School has graduated 3 Olympians. Besides you and your brother, name the other Olympian, his event, and the number of Olympic teams he made.
Hammer throw, 2 Olympic teams. I don't remember his name because you put me on the spot, but I should doggone remember it.
Well, A.J. Krueger, and he actually made 3 Olympic teams.
Krueger, so he was in Rio?
Yep. No, 2012, 2008, and 2004.
All right, well, good. Awesome.
All right. That's... Question number 3, who was your best teacher at the University of Iowa and why?
Henry Veldheis, chemistry, because he treated it like a college course.
All right, question number 4. What would you do if you saw a grizzly bear in the woods and you didn't have a gun or bear spray?
I would come in close so his claws couldn't get me.
So you'd try to wrestle him, or what does that mean? You'd come in close.
Come in close, you know. You'd hug him and wear him out.
Okay. I'm actually going to give him that. I think that's pretty brilliant there. Question number five. You have an identical twin brother, Terry, who is the associate head wrestling coach at the University of Iowa. What is your craziest story of mistaken identity?
I mean, there's just a couple of them, you know. One is, you know, I don't even know if I should tell this, but...
Yeah, you should.
We may have traded licenses at one time or another in our careers, but that's fraud, and so that's not cool.
Well, that was what I was looking for, so you put it out there. So I'm actually giving you a bonus for the one you missed, so you get 5 for 5. You're out of the hot box. Tom, thanks for joining us. This weekend is a fun meet, Oklahoma State versus Iowa. Make sure you get down there. I think it's a blackout, so if you're a Hawkeye fan, make sure to wear black.
Rock and roll, man. Thanks, guys.
All right, that was Tom Brands, head wrestling coach at the University of Iowa. Make sure to get to that Oklahoma State-Iowa meet. 3 o'clock on Sunday. Up next, we have Hudson Taylor. He was a 3-time All-American for Maryland. He's next on the mat.
Log on and listen online at 1650thefan.com, the online home of 1650 The Fan.
We are back on the mat, 1650 The Fan. I'm Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, along with Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. Our final guest, Hudson Taylor. He was a 3-time NCAA wrestling champion for Maryland. Now he is the executive director and founder of Athlete Ally, and we'll get into that. But welcome to the program, Hudson.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, fill us in again on your name. It's been a few years since we've had you on the program. Just give people and listeners the history behind the name Hudson Taylor and how you got that.
Yeah, so Hudson Taylor is a family name. My great-great-great-grandfather was a guy named James Hudson Taylor. So he was actually founded what's called the China Inland Mission. He was a really prominent Christian missionary, brought Christianity to China, and is actually attributed with converting more people to Christianity than anyone other than Paul the Apostle. So it's a family name. I'm the fourth in a long line of Hudson Taylors.
Did you learn about that history early on in your childhood?
Absolutely. I grew up going to Athletes in Action camps and FCA, and so my mom went to Lancaster Bible College. My sister just graduated from a Christian college, so that faith-based history has been something that was definitely a part of my upbringing.
Now, are you a history buff?
I don't know if I was as an athlete, but I think post-graduation, I'm getting more acquainted with history. I've been asking for some of actually James Hudson Taylor's like writings and stuff for my birthday and for holidays and stuff. So I'm getting in touch with the history more and more.
Now, you are also a magician. I don't know if you call it being a part-time magician or where you are on the scale, but is that something that you're still doing and enjoying?
All the time. You know, when I was competing, a deck of cards was the way that I kind of got my mind off of the competitive stress. So even to this day, anywhere that I go, I have a deck of cards in my pocket, and just love the technique of it, love the performance of it. Yeah, so magic continues to have a really special place in my heart, and I wish I had more time to do it.
Can you help me out? Because I haven't figured out magic yet, and when I see magicians do stuff, I'm looking close, and I'm saying, hey, I'm not going to let them dupe me on this. David Blaine, I think his name, he has a Netflix special.
Yeah.
I absolutely do not understand how he does what he does. Can you just give us some insight, maybe a little bit on what we're missing here?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of magic is about information, either controlling, concealing, or obtaining information without your audience knowing about it. So, you know, if you think about any effect, usually I'm going to gather knowledge about the identity of a word you're thinking of, a card that you've selected, without you knowing that I've obtained that information. From that point forward, you can create an effect in 1,000 different ways. And so the most skilled magicians, I think, have really, really clever ways of obtaining that information very secretly, in really amazing ways, or by controlling information. In other words, if you select a card and put it back in the deck, it might look like it's being lost and shuffled, but meanwhile, the magician has it under their control the entire time. And so a lot of it's just, you know, playing with the assumptions and understanding that that an audience member thinks they have, but really they have no idea.
So when David Blaine puts a card in a piece of fruit of Harrison Ford, is that card really there? I mean, help us out understand that part.
Yeah, I could lose my magic license.
Yeah, and I don't want you to do that, but
give too much information away. But I would just say, there's either one of two methods in which an effect like that would be possible. Either A, there is a secret way to insert a card into a lemon or an orange, or B, there's a way in which you can switch a card for another one. Right? So something might look like it's coming out of the lemon or orange, and I could switch it for your actual card or selection. So things are not always or often not what they seem.
All right, we are on the mat with Hudson Taylor, three-time All-American for Maryland and the founder of Athlete Ally. Now, as we talk about your wrestling career, three-time All-American, are you still involved with Maryland? I got the idea to get in touch with you because I saw Kerry McCoy at the Midlands. Is that still something that you get involved with on the college level?
Absolutely. I'm a proud Terp, and certainly every time that I'm in town, I try to get back on the wrestling mats and definitely support the program any and every way that I can. So, I love the sport and I love Maryland. So, always try to keep in touch with how the program is doing. Although now wrestling is sort of gone and has a little bit of a different place in my life. I've now fallen in love with jiu-jitsu is sort of my new outlet and passion in terms of combat sports. But definitely still try to stay connected to the sport as much as possible.
Yeah, tell us the difference between those two. Jiu-jitsu and wrestling are completely different in just the execution. You can go to your back, a lot of different things. What's the glaring difference between those two sports?
So there's a couple. I mean, I think first and foremost, they're super close cousins. So there's I would say 75% of your wrestling knowledge will automatically make you extremely successful in jiu-jitsu. So that's really amazing and exciting. I think the other piece of this is that because of the difference in rule set, there are techniques and leverage and attacks that are completely foreign to me as a wrestler. So despite having a lifetime of wrestling knowledge about techniques, I'm still learning things every single day in jiu-jitsu that just blow my mind because I never would have thought to, you know, use my legs in that way or to grip a wrist or an arm in a particular way. So it's still extremely enlightening for me to be just a student of a sport again. I think the other piece of it for me is, you know, as a wrestler, I was obsessed with pinning. My main goal as a wrestler was to pin every single person that I wrestled against. And, you know, there was a time where I really felt like, okay, that's the pinnacle, right? If I could pin everybody, that's the ultimate, demonstration of dominance. But, you know, as I've gotten involved in jiu-jitsu, this idea of a submission is now so appealing to me because, you know, with a pin, you're really relying upon the referee telling you that you have accomplished your goal. When you are in jiu-jitsu, when you're submitting somebody, that's your opponent essentially giving up. They tap out, and that's how the match ends. So that's very exciting for me, just this feeling of what feels like a step past the check of a pin. You know, the submission is really a checkmate. And just with the rule set, the grips, the technique, it's just so exciting for me to be a novice in a sport again.
Hudson, some of those Blair Academy teams that were right around your era there at that school have been talked about as, you know, maybe being the best high school teams of all time. What were those training sessions like? How did they prepare you for college wrestling?
So I think there's a couple things. I mean, I'm a big believer that iron sharpens iron. And the thing that was so beautiful about the Blair Room is that I would have the opportunity to get beat up every single day by some of the best guys in the country. You know, we would do a lot of Shark Tank drills where, you know, you'd have one person in for 10, 12 minutes. And, you know, when the people who are rotating in on you are Zach Esposito and Mark Perry and Kurt Backus in a group of four, you know, you can't help but get better because of that level of skill. So I think, you know, Blair was unique because, one, everybody on the team wrestled year-round. There wasn't division of other sports. Two, we were not afraid of breaking each other. I think I've gone into a lot of wrestling rooms, and sometimes wrestlers are, you know, they'll train hard, they'll practice hard, but there's this line in the sand that not everybody's willing to cross, and that's getting your practice partner to the point where they're crawling off the mat. And I think Blair was a place where we not only weren't afraid of that line, but we didn't feel like we had a successful practice unless each of us crossed that line. So that iron sharpens iron mentality, I think, is something that has led to a lot of Blair wrestlers having a tremendous amount of success. And then, you know, the other thing that I would just say is being a student of the sport. You know, I think Buxton as a coach was somebody who was always looking at what was next in terms of technique. How can we refine our training? How can we refine our approach to certain positions and not sort of be dogmatic about the things that we're doing today to sacrifice success for tomorrow? And so I think a lot of Blair wrestlers have been really able to adapt at that college level because of the mentality of being a student of the sport.
We're on the mat with Hudson Taylor, three-time All-American for Maryland and the founder of Athlete Ally. Explain to us what Athlete Ally is.
So Athlete Ally is a nonprofit organization that I started shortly after graduating from Maryland that works to end homophobia in sports. So we do a couple things. We do a lot of athlete coach education, so trying to educate players on how to create a more welcoming environment. We work with a lot of athletic departments and professional teams on their policies to make sure that they are inclusive. And then we also help athletes use their platform with a purpose. So I'm a big believer that, you know, some of the most impactful athletes in history are the ones who haven't been afraid to use their voice. So we're oftentimes trying to help athletes use their platform to make a positive impact on their team or in their community. You know, I should say I had no intention of making this my life's work and starting this organization, but there was sort of a series of happy accidents that kind of changed my life. You know, when I was at Maryland, I was a theater major. So I was in two very different cultures, one where I had teammates, you know, my brothers, who were oftentimes using, you know, homophobic language, sexist language, not because they were, you know, hateful individuals, but because that's the language that we often are taught to use in the locker room. So on the one hand, I would hear that language every single day. And on the other, I'd be in theater, and I started to have friends who were coming out, who were saying, you know what, I'm a member of the LGBT community. And, you know, I was faced with this drastic juxtaposition, one where I saw, you know, my sport, which I wanted to be a place where everybody's accepted, where everybody can maximize their potential. But yet there's a culture that's in place that I see, that I think continues to this day, to prevent every athlete from being comfortable being themselves. So when I was a senior at Maryland, I started wearing an LGBT equality sticker on my headgear, sort of just as a simple statement of support. And that sticker literally changed my life because two things happened. One day after practice, one of my coaches pulled me aside and said, you know, Hudson, I see you wearing this sticker. Would you be willing to do an interview about why you're an ally, about why you care? I was like, sure, of course, no problem. What I didn't know is that coach of mine was actually closeted. So he wasn't out at the time, but heard me having these conversations with my teammates. But then the second thing that happened was I did this interview, and as a response to that interview, I got about 2,000 emails from closeted athletes. you know, kids who reached out to me and said, you know, Hudson, I just read this article, and for the first time in my life, I'm going to try out for the wrestling team. I'm going to go into the locker room and not be afraid. And in all honesty, those emails changed my life, because I hope, like a lot of your listeners, wrestling has been a thing that's been important in their lives. And certainly that was the case for me. I don't know who or where I would be if it weren't for my sport. And this idea that there's so many people out there who don't feel as though the sport of wrestling or sports in general are a safe space for them, I think is a real shame. So that really became the beginning of me trying to do more to get other allies to step forward and say, you know what, we can be more respectful of one another. We can shape our athletic environments so that everybody has an equally positive experience. So that's really what I've been trying to do these past 7 years.
All right, Hudson, thanks for joining us on this program. Great to have you back on. I think there's a future video for you, and it can be how to use magic in your wrestling. I think that you have a natural way to bring that in, and it could be a big hit. But I think you could use some of those techniques on the wrestling mat too.
And can I give one plug for everybody?
Sure.
If you are finishing your wrestling career, get into jiu-jitsu earlier. My only regret is that I didn't find this transitional sport sooner. You know, I think it's a great thing if you're no longer competing or you're not coaching. It's a great way to stay semi-connected to the sport and to grappling without giving it up entirely.
All right, great plug there from Hudson Taylor. Thanks for joining us. For Andy Hamilton and Tom Brands, I'm Kyle Klingman. You've been listening to On the Mat on 1650 The Fan.
You've been listening to On the Mat, the Cedar Valley's longest-running radio show devoted entirely to wrestling. Brought to you by Roland Ford and the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum on 1650 The Fan.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.